Did you know there's an online cannabis company that ships federally legal THC right to your door? And they found a way to combine THC with carefully selected functional ingredients to create gummies, baked goods, and flower for whatever type of buzz you'd want. I'm talking about Mood.com. They have an incredible line of cannabis gummies, and you get 20% off your first order at Mood.com with promo code SPECIALISTS with an S on the end. This isn't some rinky-dink discount of 5 or 10%. This is 20% off your first order. Forget one-size-fits-all supplements that only get you high. Mood's functional gummies are optimized to kick in as little as 15 minutes and take you to the mood you're looking for. My favorite are the Sleepy Time Advanced gummies. That's right, those are for sleepy time. You know when you just can't fall asleep? Take these and they'll put you right in the mood. Beyond gummies, Mood also has a selection of flower, pre-rolls, bakery treats, and beverages. Listen, you can find gummies to just get you high pretty much everywhere these days. But Mood's functional gummies combine premium, federally legal THC with targeted botanicals to help you get into the perfect mood, usually in as little as 15 minutes. And everything ships discreetly right to your door. No dispensary lines, no awkward conversations, just better days and nights delivered to your doorstep. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with promo code SPECIALISTS with an S on the end. So head to Mood.com, find the functional gummy that matches exactly what you're looking for, and let Mood help you discover your perfect mood. And don't forget to use promo code SPECIALISTS when you check out to save 20% on your first order. Try it today at mood.com.
Survivor Specialist John and McKenna are back, and we are talking the finale of AU versus the World. And boy, what a finale. Nobody saw any of this coming. We were shocked, and didn't know what to make of it. Right, John?
Absolutely. This result had not been telegraphed to us throughout the entire season. It wasn't easy to predict whatsoever. I'm just so elated to be able to discuss this today. And all honesty, like sarcasm aside, I am actually super stoked to talk about this finale, because despite the fact that it was fairly predictable, there were some things that did catch me off guard in it. And it was a solid conclusion to this weird summer experiment we had of this weird 16-day format, Australian Survivor, AU versus the World. It's been a wild 3 weeks, and it's nice to have this nice, neat little bow on everything now.
Yeah, because I definitely enjoyed the season. I think it was, Phil will probably do a podcast on, like, was this a hit or not? Was this good or not? And I think it was a great idea. I think it was fun to watch. We have discussed the gender imbalance and the Parvati and Suri of it all with an all-women tribe. Like, we've discussed all of this to death. But even with that, it was still so much fun to watch. It was just a game on TV, and it was just content that we could soak up the summer with that wasn't Big Brother.
I think that's really the big thing that this kind of proved, as if anything, when it comes to Survivor, and especially because it's AU Survivor, Survivor fans just love Survivor. Mm-hmm. That's really what it comes down to. And like, this could have been an absolutely awful season, but at least we had something to talk about in this off season. It was something to distract us from all the perpetual 50 hype that we've had for so long, and bring us into the lead up to 49 as we get ready for another season of Survivor. It was something, it was an event. And some people might view that incredibly well. Some people might take it and think, oh, okay, well, it's not really Survivor. And like, you're going to have people who argue that. The outcome of all of this is not going to help any debates about who the best Survivor player of all time is, because let me tell you, we'll get into that for sure, but this was so fun. And I think that's really what it comes down to, is we talked about it when I was on here last week, and you guys talked about it like a lot throughout the entire run of the show. It was so awesome seeing these 14 players come out and step on the beach, despite the fact that we didn't know who four of them really were, right? Mm-hmm. Like, despite the fact that, McKenna, you and I are, like, we've watched Australian Survivor, we watched American Survivor, we dabbled with South African Survivor for a little bit, like, but didn't really know Rob at all. We didn't know Lisa, we didn't know Tommy, we didn't know Cass, but still seeing them out there, you get the sense of them as Survivor players. You get the sense of, like, why Survivor is so important. And I think we really see that in Final Tribal Council with, like, Lisa's question of, like, Survivor makes me happy. What about Survivor makes you happy? Like, that feels like a celebration of this game that all of us love so much. And the reason why we are here talking about Survivor again on a Sunday at the beginning of September when normally we wouldn't be able to.
Yeah. And, like, we because it was such a shortened season from U.S. Survivor and really shortened from Australian Survivor, some people say, like, well, is it a win? Is it not? And then at the same time, like, we've played a full game of Survivor in a single day. Yep. and count things like that as a win. So, like, this is definitely a grueling, hard game, even though the day count was short because of the caliber of players that were there. And let's get into this episode officially, because we start with a bunch of just, like, heartwarming moments between everybody. And it starts off with Parvati and Suri and a little bit more, like, backstory between them, and they're hugging each other, so happy that they made it to the four. And it really is kind of that full circle moment from Micronesia.
Yeah, and that is really how the Australian editors took this season, right? Like, with the, I can't believe we're actually, like, 5 minutes into this and you haven't mentioned who's won this season yet, McKenna. But yes, go ahead, McKenna, just say it.
Parvati?
Yes. Parvati has come out. She has won another season of Survivor. And again, this is why we're going to have so many debates on the internet over who's the best Survivor player. Parvati has joined the ranks of the two-time winners, with maybe an asterisk, maybe not an asterisk. Well, I guess we'll have that conversation.
Two-time eventually. Winners of Survivor franchise.
Yeah.
Exactly. So, not two-time winner of, like, American Survivor. Yeah.
But we have, like, the editors definitely took this season. And I think it's actually really good that, like, the two of us who specialize in talking about Survivor in the past are here to kind of recap this season that was really a love letter to Micronesia and this relationship between Parvati and Suri. And just this idea of, like, the Survivor soulmate that they talk about so much in this episode. It feels like a full circle moment, right? Like, the thought process, like, Micronesia was recorded in 2007.
Mm-hmm.
That was 18 years ago.
Okay. So also, like, while this moment is so special, I was thinking, if Parvati had won immunity, where was Parvati's vote going? Was she voting out Amanda and taking Suri, or was she also voting out Suri? Right. So, like, she's writing Amanda's wrong, and where she can be that hero in the story because she wasn't tested either.
Yeah, she kind of gets that little bit there. But I mean, we've talked about it ad nauseum on this, like, you and I have talked about it. Phil, Will, everyone who has been on The Specialist has talked about the fact that when it comes to Micronesia, Parvati and Amanda were intending to take Suri to final three, where they thought it was a final three that would be pleading their case to the jury. And it was a surprise final two that made it so that Suri wasn't there to do it.
Right.
It's made it so that, like, having this moment here, it almost has that same, it doesn't quite get there as to the same level of catharsis that, like, the Tony Sarah moment with fire making in World Winners at War had. But it's almost on the same level, and it has that emotional level. And we see Suri mention it in Final Tribal Council.
I was gonna say, it's almost more emotional at that moment
Yeah.
When he asks her question. Like, that's really the crux of their relationship.
But the fact that we get here, the fact that we get to a point where we have a moment 18 years later, and I think that's another important thing about this. Ciri and Parvi have been playing this game way longer than everyone else has. Mm-hmm. Yes, they've been out there and they've done it so many times, but Australian Survivor got revitalized in 2016. 8 years after Parvati had already won the game.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. One gripe I had with this like intro that we had is it felt like Janine was spoiling everything.
Yes.
Because I knew what happened. It just felt like Janine was saying, all right, so Parvati won. We're voting between Ciri and Luke. Okay.
I'm glad you caught that too, because I caught that as well in this edit. It's like the tense of this conversation doesn't make sense. This isn't a future tense, just in case conversation. This is this confessional is happening after someone's already won immunity conversation.
Yeah, it felt very like, all right, so we know Luke isn't winning this immunity necklace. So the only way this works is Janine won it or Parvati won it. And we all saw the preview of what the challenge was.
Yeah.
So it felt a little like we had these great scenes. And then with Janine's, it just was like, ah, darn.
Yeah. I feel like it's just kind of an oversight by the editors. Or they just decided, hey, coming into this episode, Parvati already has 69 confessionals. It's okay. We don't need to hide the fact that she's won the game already.
And then what I liked about Luke's bit here was his was all based on relationships, like his game was based on relationships, and you could really feel his heart in the game. It during the challenge, it almost felt like the martyr approach.
It definitely had those like hints of coach there, right? Like as he's screaming, falling, and like really fighting to hold himself up, it definitely felt that way.
Yeah. So like after these little intro packages here, we go right into the challenge, and that's basically where they have to hold 20% of their body weight with the torture foot pegs.
For those who, maybe this is your first time watching Australian Survivor likes torturing people when it comes to these final immunity challenges.
I mean, they flip through a few of them.
Yeah. They look like torture devices, legitimately.
You think Thailand is bad.
Yeah. At least you're not skewering people in Thailand.
Mm-hmm.
But, McKenna, this is also something that we've talked about the last couple seasons on the Rewind when it comes to final immunity challenges. One thing we kind of hate about the American approach to final immunity challenge now, and there's been a lot of talk about it with like the vote for season 50 and what that final immunity challenge should be. Australian Survivor has never strayed from the idea that the last immunity challenge needs to be an endurance challenge. And it needs to test the will of the contestants and how much they want to win, what it means to them, right? There's a reason some of these challenges in Australian Survivor go like 6-8 hours as people are holding on for dear life. And this one looks like it's designed to be done quicker, right? And obviously, like,
spreading apart and the sticks of the pegs plus the weight, because probably just because they're on that time crunch.
Exactly, right? Like, it feels like a truncated season made it so that they had to have this like endurance challenge that had an end sight, right? It's not like pull out where we're putting people out on a buoy and just seeing how long they are willing to stay on it. But it felt appropriate for the conclusion of an Australian Survivor season. And this is honestly, Parvati had one of the most badass lines ever during this immunity challenge. When she says, this is my challenge, that's my necklace. It's like, yes, it kind of falls into the complaints that like Bill's had about Parvati this season, where she feels a little bit rehearsed and like feels like she's really playing it up. But that was one of those, like, that was a give you chills type of moment. That's like this is the determination Parvati's bringing into this game. Like, Parvati is intending to win it
too. Like, you walk into that challenge and it's like, oh, I know who's winning this. Like, it screams Parvati to no end. And then I would guess Janine would be next, just because of like build and the fact that Luke has been out rather early in so many endurance challenges. Mm-hmm. So, but Ceri loses her balance at 30 minutes and Janine loses her balance at an hour and 15 minutes. But then Luke like tips back and leans his back on the structure. And I was like, wait, so that's allowed to like regain your balance or something? Maybe there's like a second rule, like a 5 second rule that we don't know about.
Yeah, it's kind of like a tush push, right? Like, I'm unclear watching it and seeing like what was going on, because he like kind of like sits back for a second and then rocks back up.
Right.
I don't know. It wasn't clear, and like the edit probably just shouldn't have shown it. It's really what it comes down to avoid that confusion for us asking it. But it also doesn't matter because Luke loses anyways.
Right.
So it's true. One of those things where it's like, okay, I don't know exactly what the rules are, but I know Luke loses anyway, so it's okay.
Mm-hmm.
Honestly, I'm impressed Ceri goes 30 minutes on this challenge. Like, it's not easy. Like,
yeah.
as much as not easy,
we have these like foothold challenges in US Survivor, but none of them are like the pegs.
No,
nothing is quite like those pegs. And like, you have, I guess, with the footholds, more of the surface area of your foot. Rather than these pegs that are just like jamming in one pressure point on your foot.
Yeah.
And it's so bad.
It's not fun. And like, it is one of those things that you can kind of like eventually tune out.
Mm-hmm.
You can eventually get there and be like, okay, I don't care about this anymore. Like, it's fine. The pain's there, but like, you can zen out and not care about it. But you're mm-hmm. also dealing with that weight at the same time, which is kind of throwing you off. It's honestly, I really like this challenge. I like the spectacle of this challenge. These mm-hmm. like
giant ram horns,
yeah, these like cultish altars that we have the contestants sitting at, like we're like going there to sacrifice them or whatever. It was cool. It was mm-hmm. a cool design in for a fairly simple challenge, but yeah. Australian Survivor does that. Even like last season of Australian Survivor, where they did have like the foot pegs and stuff, right. Again, but but it's like the grid and they like come up as they go and everything, right? Like
mm-hmm.
that's kind of fun. And like, that's what I will always appreciate about Australian Survivor, is they know how to make a spectacle out of something that's pretty simple.
Mm-hmm. And going for close to 2 hours on that is crazy. They didn't even go to the next foot peg until like an hour in or something like that, or half hour in. I forget. Yeah. I think it was like an hour. But that's crazy to just sit there on this peg, digging into your foot, to wait for it to go the next one.
And that's almost the worst part, right? The anticipation of like, okay, there's more. Like, this one sucks. The first peg didn't look terrible.
Right.
It looked like you could like fit like
your heel.
A good, yeah, right? Or like kind of like stick it in the arch of your foot and it would like fill up the entire thing so it would be dispersed enough. But that second peg got small. That third peg might as well have been a spear point going into someone's foot.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So Queen Parvati wins the challenge. She secures her spot in the final three. But I almost feel like this was worse off for Parvati and Ceri to go to like to have both of them go to the finale, because is Parvati a better fire maker than Ceri?
I don't know. I mean, we'll get into it, but maybe Ceri's not as bad at fire making as we think.
I don't think she's bad, because she did a decent job against Luke. But if she did a decent job against Luke when she bombed the first time,
mm-hmm.
could Parvati have maybe saved the two of them by taking the votes?
I think as much as Parvati wants to go with Ceri to the final three and wants to get her there, she wants to get her there playing her game. And her game is a social game. And that's really what it comes down to, right? Like, we talk about Parvati, and yes, she comes up with some like very clutch immunity wins at times. Mm-hmm. But the most impressive thing about Parvati in both games that she has won of Survivor, she can rally people together, right? She can rally those people together so that they want to work together and want to vote with them. I think Suri and Parvi taking this moment and like pitching to Janine, Janine, you don't stand a chance if Luke is sitting there, is probably the best bet to get both her and Suri into the final three.
Or is it what this comment says? They should have flipped it on Janine. So it's Janine against Suri for fire.
I think there was genuine concern Luke was going to get all of the Aussie votes.
Right.
I think that was a genuine concern. And I think there's a concern about that. If Suri goes against Janine in fire, Suri gets Janine out. Luke hasn't turned on her at all. Luke's still getting her vote. And I think in the end, like, Parvati probably doesn't get, like, Lisa's vote if Suri's there either. So I think, like, strategically, like, Parv almost wants Suri to go here to secure the win.
Parv wants Suri to go, and Luke wants Janine to go. Janine should want Luke to go.
It's tough, right?
I mean, Janine's kind of... was kind of a little bit more dead than Luke was, but like
Janine's more dead than I think any of us anticipated, but we'll get to that when we get to final tribal council.
So I think Luke and Parvati almost want their number one ally on the jury, because then that makes it the four votes theoretically.
It's the Kyle Camilla situation from 48, right?
Yeah.
You wanted that person there to be advocating you for the to the jury and to be that guaranteed vote for you, right? Like, they both knew that they had to, like, there has to be a sacrifice that the island demands sometime, right?
Yeah.
And in this case, like, yes, it would be awesome for Suri to be sitting at final tribal council and getting there, but there's just one last obstacle, and that's the way the game works.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, they all hated that scramble that they had to do, because they all have to kind of decide where to vote because their happy little family has to break up. And basically, Luke is saying, please save me, Janine. And Suri is saying, please save me, Janine. So Janine is really the deciding factor in this entire vote. She holds the most power, where typically, you know, you think it's the immunity winner that holds the most power. And it's like, no, Janine had the power in this vote.
I had this thought while watching this transpire, because we haven't seen a final four vote in American Survivor
in a long while.
Yeah. In a while. It's been a little while, right? Since the last time Suri was on American Survivor.
Wow. That's crazy.
So seeing that, right, and seeing this dynamic here, and this is why I think people are like, okay, we don't want forced fire making, because we want to see this type of scramble. We want to see what's happening here. And I think we kind of got into this sense where we were placated by the fact that, okay, but like, it doesn't happen that often. Most of the time it is just a pile on, like, the obvious target goes out. Mm-hmm. But there are instances where people are close enough that they want to stick with that. And like, obviously this is an outlier, because these are people with previous relationships with each other, and they know each other, so they,
which maybe is why 50 would benefit from not force fire.
Yeah, maybe. Exactly. But it also, like, I'm gonna go on a little bit of a tangent here, because this is the first, is this the first final three in Australian Survivor history?
No.
It is, though, right? Because you didn't have another final three in Brains vs. Braun 2, right? That was final two?
That was a final two.
I'm pretty sure this is the first final three in Australian Survivor history.
Was it? What about?
I'm pretty sure. Call me out. It's okay, guys. You can call me out on this one, because I can't quite remember.
Was Heroes versus Villains was just George and Liz? No, there was
another guy in there. But yeah,
this is not the first final three.
Anyways, point being is final two votes. The point I'm actually trying to make is final two votes. It had me thinking about Survivor history, and again, like, we rewind Survivor history, so it's why. I think about final two votes and how many, like, very interesting moments we have in, like, the final three vote, where if we go into a final two, where we had a lot of complaints about like people just bringing a goat there, right? But how many times have we had a final two where someone's taken someone who beats them, right? It's happened pretty iconically in Survivor a few times. And going into a final three, like that's why we don't want forced fire making, is because we want to see these mistakes be made. We want to see people make decisions that might not be good for their game because of the connections they've made on this island. And that was so nice about this. That was, and it was really nice that when Luke brings it up in Final Tribal Council, like, I switched my vote in the George boot because Janine asked me to. And it led to the point where Janine literally couldn't say, no, I'm not going to put you into fire.
Yeah. Yeah. So let's talk about this fire making competition, because this was better than I could have hoped for, because Luke felt like he had this in the bag and then started fumbling and got scared that he was fumbling. Ceri was already on the back step and nervous that she was on the back step, but just kept that steady pace and kept it going. Ceri's fire was actually going pretty well. If Luke fumbled like one more time, Ceri almost could have had this and gotten the win.
I think this was, I mean, first off, it was the most exciting part of the entire episode, because it was legitimately a moment where it was like, you go into it thinking, okay, whatever. We saw Ceri try to make fire earlier and like couldn't even get it started.
Right.
We have this entire scramble beforehand being like Parvati telling Ceri, yeah, you're cooked if you have to make fire against Luke. Like, you just won't be able to do it. And we see Ceri be calm and collected about it. Like, there's a little bit of panic at first when it's getting started, but as soon as she gets that thing lit, she is calm and she is working on it. And like you said, Luke is starting to kind of give to the pressure there, right? Like, it's like he got his fire to a point where it should win, right? Like, he should be winning, and then it falls over and it collapses. And that's the thing, is it's so nice watching a fire making competition go wrong like that, right? And like, I get, we get like the wind blowing again.
It's also like a lengthier one too. Like, props to Heidi, who could do it in 3 seconds, but also I like the, not necessarily struggle, but like to watch the competition happen, not just like turn to grab another drink and come back and it's over.
Yeah, exactly, right? Like, it gives a little bit more suspense, in especially in an episode where there was not a lot of suspense. And this is what we want. We want to see what's going here. And then all of a sudden, as you're watching this go out, you're processing these what-if scenarios, right? It's like, what if Ceri is sitting at the end? Does that change Parvati's ability to win the game? Like, she's clearly not winning 6-1 at that point.
No,
but is it enough to make it so that she loses the game? Probably not, but maybe.
Yeah.
Who knows? Because Ceri has all of these connections, and like,
it could be Janine coming down to the, oh wait, there can't be a tie. Never mind.
No.
Well, no. Yes, there could
be. Well, yeah, there could. There could be a 3-3-1 tie.
And then Janine could have had to, anywho.
But
big La La Land dream.
But that's the thing, right? Like, you're processing all these possible options of what might be going on coming in, like, as you're watching this fire making go. And as you watch Luke's fire fall down, or he builds it back up and the wind's blowing it like Teeny in 47, right? Like, you're getting these moments where it's like, okay, where's this going? Like, is Ceri going to get there? And then we finally see Luke's rope catch fire. And you're like, okay, it's done. And it goes off. And moments later, Ceri burns through the rope too. And it's like, this is actually how close it was. Like, it was not.
After she had stopped touching it too.
Yeah.
Because it was like, oh, Luke won, hugs and all that. And then all of a sudden her rope like lights. She's just, Ceri is just great.
I mean, talks about in this, right? Like, it's almost this title that sucks to hold, this title of the best to never win. But seeing this completely changes my opinion of like what Ceri can do in 50. Again, and I said that earlier in the season, just like seeing her performance in some of these challenges where she's holding up a lot better than you think in endurance challenges. It would help if American Survivor used more endurance challenges again. But sorry, Ceri, that's not the case. But one of the big things that even like Phil has been saying in the preseason coverage for 50 that we were doing earlier in the summer is this idea that Ceri is the perfect person to take until you get to fire making, and then you can just like put her in fire making. It's totally fine. She proved that that's not the case right now. In a season that no one on 50 has seen.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. This season, I had also just recently watched Game Changers, so that reignited my love for Ceri, because you get bogged down with certain reality TV people. Like, do they really need to come back again? And it's just like, you know what? Yes, they do. I don't think I'll ever be sad if Ceri is on my screen, because I feel like she finds new ways to do the same things. Like, she finds new ways to get to Final Four.
Yeah, and that's the most impressive thing about Ceri, right? Like, yes, I understand fatigue from seeing Ceri over and over again. The fact that we are going to see Ceri for, what, this is her fourth time on reality TV in the last...
3 years or something like that. Because she has Big Brother. She has...
Oh, sorry, five, because I forgot about Snake in the Grass. Big Brother, Trainers, Snake in the Grass, this, and then we're going to see her again on 50, right? Like, I get it. We're getting a lot of Ceri. I guess, yeah, it'll be like 2.5 years by the time season 50 airs.
Mm.
But that's okay. Like, this is this is someone who goes into a game with inevitable odds, right? Like, the odds are stacked against Ceri at all points. She's not the most physical, so she can't win out on these challenges. She's so dangerous socially that nobody wants to sit with her at the end, but she still is able to make relationships that get her towards the end of the game. And in this case,
too.
Sorry?
And strategic ones too. Like, she'll be like, mm-hmm. Oh, this vote should go this way because of this. And it's like, oh yeah, Ceri. Yes. That's actually what should happen.
And yes, like they're again, like this is like the awkward thing about this season of Survivor is we have Ceri and Parvati reunited. Like, we already saw them run over a game before together.
Mm-hmm.
It's not surprising that they were able to do it again until you take into consideration something that, like, Tommy says in his voting confessional that we get at the end, right? Like, Parvati comes out as the number one target, and she's there, and it's increased by the fact that the person that helped her win the game of Survivor previously is right there on the beach with her.
Mm-hmm.
It's something that shouldn't have happened, right? Like, the fact that
we shouldn't have worked with Parvati because Parvati beat her in like the last game that they played together. She should have like strung her along and then cut her loose.
Potentially. But in the end, like, you have to look at these other 12 players on this season. It's like, why did you even let these two play with each other in the first place? Right. That's what Rob was saying at the very beginning. That's what Tony was saying when he went out of like, you have to break these two up.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Like, it people saw it. But Parvati still gets to the end of the game without a vote for her.
Absolutely insane. Insane. We get to the next morning and Parvati is just heartbroken. It's so sad to watch that they don't get the breakfast, because there is a split second where before Ceri is voted out, they're like, I think we're having breakfast tomorrow. And me knowing the results is like, oh, you're not having breakfast tomorrow. But they do have that, you know, last day, not day 39, not day 26, not day 50, whatever, breakfast. And pour out their water bottle onto the fire because it's not needed anymore, and head off to Final Tribal Council.
Yeah, I mean, it's a moment that we see in every finale, mm-hmm. and it's like, cool, we did it. We don't get a fallen comrade section, McKenna. I'm sorry, but Australian Survivor's never done that, so it's fine.
All right. So I wrote down the final tribal council questions, but obviously before we get into those is the opening statements. I found the clear path of Janine and Parvati's opening statements, and I got lost, I feel, with Luke's. So Janine's was all about trust and loyalty. She came into that, she played with that, and it wound up with her in the end with trust and loyalty. Great. Perfect arc. Luke comes in with a story and had my heartstrings going. I was like, "That this is great." And then somehow I lost his plot point. And then Parvati says, I'm the biggest threat on this island, and I sensed it the entire time, and I used that and navigated my way through to sit here. Ark, big threat. That's where Luke lost part of it for me, was his opening statement, where, like, you could feel the heart in Luke. And I love that about his character, that he is just, like, he makes you smile, but I don't know where his game reasoning was.
I think what it comes down to is Luke kind of got in the way of himself a little. Mm-hmm. Now, granted, I'll say this. I don't think Final Tribal Council was edited that well. I think it was kind of all over the place, and it was like, I don't know what's really happening here. Like, yes, it has a format and everything, and we're seeing questions and answers to questions, and, like, that's fine. But it felt like the answers were, like, weirdly edited, and the timing was really weird for some reason. I don't know why.
Because JLP was like, all right, you're going to be asked a lot of questions. So it might have, each juror might have had a Parvati Luke Janine question, or at least two of the jurors, but they only showed one question per juror. That might have been the disconnect.
Potentially. I don't know. It was just a little weird. There was just something off. And I've kind of been saying that about the entire season, right? I said that the other day when we were talking about the season, like, something about the season feels a little off. And this was, again, one of those instances. I don't know what's going on with Australian Survivor production. Obviously, none of us really do, because, I mean, this is also the last episode of JLP we'll ever get.
I wanted to, like, not talk about that.
We have to talk about it because it's so sad.
Let's talk about it later.
Okay. But this is, it just felt a little off for some reason. And it kind of, like, I'm like, okay, this is kind of what I would expect of the conclusion for this season, right? Like, it felt a little off the entire time. So does Final Tribal Council. But it's, like, it's the editing of it. And it's one of the things that Australian Survivor kind of struggles with sometimes, is editing.
Yeah. I mean, hence why we all knew Parvati was winning from episode one. But let's get into these questions. So Lisa asks, how does Survivor make you happy? Because I am one of the biggest Survivor fans, and playing this game makes me so happy. What about this game makes you happy? And she directs that at Luke. It could have been to everybody, but she directs it at Luke, and he's basically like, a lot of this camp life stuff is so much fun. Being king of the jungle, catching crabs. And, like, this is Luke. This he slam dunked that question, because that was such a good question for him.
Honestly, it's just such a good question in general. I cannot believe we have never heard that question in a season of Survivor before. Lisa, you killed it. This is such a phenomenal question, because, like, a lot of the times you see people, like, coming up with these questions, and it's all the same ones, right? Like, oh, like, why didn't you take me? Or what were you thinking in this moment? Or, like, setting someone up for something. This is such a genuine question that I think is so important to ask, especially in a season like this that's really celebrating the game of Survivor. Like, how does Survivor make you happy? And you're right. Luke's response to it was fantastic. And it was, yes, it's focusing on the camp life stuff, which is, like, Australian Survivor goes for many more days than American Survivor, which makes it so that, like, that response makes a lot of sense. And
also, I feel like with Lisa asking this question, whomever asks this question has their certain connection point with it. And that is Lisa's, is the fun of it. If, say, Tony asks this question and someone says, oh, I love, you know, the scheming part of it, where, you know, you have your partner in crime and you just, like, maneuver around the game. That's my favorite part. Like, that is a Tony answer, and he would resonate with it. That's what I love about this question, is it's so open-ended for the asker and the answerer.
And I think one of the beautiful things about this question is that you don't have to agree with what they enjoy most about Survivor. It's more about how well they're able to present what they enjoy about Survivor.
Yeah. Yeah. Suri, ugh. This question was so, like, emotional, because she directs hers at Parvati, saying, I mean, I was bummed, But you were more bummed than I was. Why was that? Like, you are basically going on to for sure win the game. Why were you so sad that I got out? This helps you. And she was like, basically, you trusted me. And that was enough for me to say, we need to go to the end together. Because Sari, you didn't have to trust me. You had other options. You had other people dying to be your number one. But you trusted me, the huge threat. So, like, I was indebted to you.
It's a really interesting perspective because obviously these two have worked lockstep together. We talked about it countless times already in this episode. But they are both players who know the threat level of the other one. They know how dangerous it is to be sitting beside that person.
Right.
They both wanted to do it before. They both wanted to do it again. And, you know, both of them, I think, feel very confident they can beat the other. But at the same time, in the back of their head, they're like, can I actually beat the other person?
Yeah.
And
they were willing to take the risk because they felt so strongly about each other, which was nice.
Yeah. And this was, yes, obviously, this is one of those like pre-game relationships that kind of extends so far past the game.
Mm-hmm.
This is a relationship that's existed for nearly 20 years.
Yeah.
And I think it really does come down to that like surprise final two in Micronesia. Like, I think it was really like Parvati being like, I was supposed to be sitting beside you previously. Like, we were already supposed to be sitting beside each other, and now we're finally getting the chance to.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Tommy goes on to ask Parvati, were you playing with me or just playing me? And she's genuine in saying, I did want to work with you, but to a certain point. And Tommy mm-hmm. was like, well, I want, like, why didn't you want to work with me longer? And Parvati, I wish Parvati was like, you didn't want to work with me. So, like,
yeah.
Why was I going to work with you? That, like, response didn't happen. But she was just like, I can't be allies with everyone, Tommy. But I did want to work with you to a certain extent.
Which, honestly, like, a bit of a safe answer for this type of question. But it makes sense. Like, it is the answer, right? Like,
right out in front of him. Like,
yeah. Like, don't want to be, like, just, like, flat out. I think, actually, this shows a lot of Parvati's maturity. Mm-hmm. Because I think Micronesia Parvati would be, like, I was playing you. Yeah, right? And this was Parvati being, like, no, like, this is a game, right? Like, I can't be allies with everyone. At some point, like, I have to cut people to get here.
Right.
And this does really go to show Parvati's maturity in her 5-season arc of Survivor.
And then Luke kind of claps back saying, I wanted to work with you, Tommy. I was going on my world tour. And then Tommy's like, well, you want an Australian to win.
Mm-hmm.
Why shouldn't I want a world person to win, aka Parvati? And Luke is like, well, you didn't use us and then expected us for a vote. So I don't know, like, you should vote with us now, though.
It's very interesting because
Luke made a good point of, like, you didn't want us and then you wanted us and now we didn't want you, so.
It's very interesting because and it brings into light a very interesting aspect of this, like, versus season. We've talked about it a few times in the podcast before, mm-hmm. but when there's an us versus them narrative, and we talked about it preceding this podcast in Australian Survivor and just being like, okay, the reason why we thought Luke or Janine should get rid of the other is because it gives the Australians the majority of the jury and they can just like load onto an Australian to win the game.
Mm-hmm.
What we're seeing here is the fallback of that plan, of that like Australia strong, is that it does alienate the other people against you. And I don't think that is exactly how Tommy's approaching this by any means.
No, I think he just clapped back at Luke because Luke was...
I think it's a valid question to ask there. But I do think Luke's response of, we showed our loyalty to you. You took it, like, it didn't work.
Mm-hmm.
I approached you about something and then you decided to just, like, throw it back in our face. So it didn't work. And again, that is part of Survivor, right? Like, sometimes timing just doesn't work in Survivor. And that's... Again, the beauty of Parvati's game here is that, like, she used the timing necessary. Like, she took advantage of all the moments of timing that she needed in order to get to the end of the game here. Luke didn't have that opportunity. Yes, he had some great plays throughout the game, but he did kind of get into a position on the bottom, which I mean, we'll get to in a minute. But before we move off Tommy, I have to say, that wolf poncho was incredible.
Tommy from Finland is just incredible in general. And he needs to play more Survivor where I can understand them.
Yes. No watching Finnish Survivor, eh?
No, I don't think so. Cass is next. And she has actually a question that I don't really like. I don't like this question, but I think Parvati handled it very well. Which votes do you have and why? Because that can either show if you are overconfident or underconfident. And I think somehow by naming only four, she was the perfect amount of confident, where it didn't feel like she was underselling her game or overselling it. So she says that she hopes that Cass would vote for her because they were kind of equals in game style and gameplay. That Lisa would vote for her because of, you know, the world strong and they worked very well together. Obviously that Suri would have her vote. Or Suri would vote for her, and then Kirby because Parvati tried hard to keep Kirby in the game.
I get why you wouldn't like this question. I do like this question. I don't like the question for what it is, but I like the question for what it makes the person answering have to do.
I just don't know where is the gauge of too overconfident and underselling your game. Is it just over what you need? Is it exactly what you need? And I think it all depends on either the jury or how you yourself sell it.
I think this is, I think what this question really is asking is, what's your social game?
Oh, yes.
And it's asking it in a weird way because it's so important who you name. Because I think if you name the wrong person, you can completely lose their vote. Mm-hmm. Or someone else's vote for not naming them. But I think this is really a test of the social game and how well you know people and who you're supposed to be, and especially how well you know the person asking the question.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was answered very well for a quote-unquote negative question.
Mm-hmm. It feels like a trap, is what it is. This question feels like a trap.
Sarah is next, and talk about traps.
Wow.
Basically she directly, like, it's basically Sarah pulls up a chair, sits right in front of Janine, and is like, why are you stoking the flames when you're Aussie strong? Why are you telling Kirby I'm going after her when we need the numbers to stay strong so you're not in the minority the whole entire merge and have to scrape by?
This is where it was very clear that Luke didn't stand a chance to win this game. It became very apparent that Sarah held Janine accountable for her own ouster and destroying any chance of Australia strong. It's so fascinating. And we kind of talked about it earlier. Like, everyone kind of mentioned it earlier on in some of the earlier recaps, how the Australians almost have this greater difficulty going against the world because they are all from a single series. Mm-hmm. Whereas there's like this diversity on the world tribe, which makes it so, like, yes, there's the three Americans. They were in the minority on that original tribe, but they're in a minority with a bunch of singles. And that makes it so that there has to be social interaction there.
Right.
Whereas the Australians, they all know each other. They're all from the same series. They have these connections that they have to work on. And knowing their games is so important. They should know each other's games. That's the big thing, right? Like, they should know each other's games. They should know. Like, Janine should have known going that to Kirby. Kirby was
gonna headhunt.
Mm-hmm, that Kirby was a headhunter. And, like, if Kirby hears her name, she has to go for whoever's putting her name out there. And it did cause that rift, right? And especially with the way that Luke had been selling this idea of, oh, I was an underdog because of the Sarah vote put us in a minority. And Sarah having to point out Luke, your closest ally is the reason that happened in the first place. You had to play in the bottom because of this connection that both of you are trying to say is the reason you're here in the first place.
And I almost feel, though, if Janine said, I did it at the Tony vote,
mm-hmm.
because we were now outnumbered. Like, we had nobody in our corner. It was just Luke and I. And I needed somebody ahead of us because we mm-hmm. were the next on the chopping block. If Janine had phrased it that then, that she told Kirby before the merge, I mm-hmm. think that could have really aided in her discussion of this question, because Kirby didn't say anything to the effect of, well, Janine did tell me a few votes prior.
Yeah.
But you also then won immunity and there was that weird tribal council twist. But then the merge happened and you were vulnerable. So that's why I wanted to go for you. Like, Janine, yes, stoked the flames, but it's because she was in the pot ready to be put on those flames and she needed someone else to be in the pot before her.
Yeah, this was the point where it was so fascinating because on our last recap when we were talking about it, like, the one thing I kind of wanted was to see Janine come out as like this front runner to win here. I had no idea she was drawing as dead as she was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, especially not getting asked like any questions aside from attacked.
I think this was like the editors being like, hey, just so you remember, Janine is here. She doesn't stand a chance of winning.
Well, yeah. And I feel like you almost have to include this question for sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
Shawnee wants to know Luke's most vulnerable moment and how did he flip it? And this is where he talks about the parchment that Parvati has with Cass about the idol. And he feels vulnerable because now his safety could possibly be taken away from him. And that he needs to try and, you know, get this Parvati to rip up the parchment. And he does. That's his like spin on how he flips things. But the way Parvati talks about that interaction,
yeah,
is amazing.
It's just a masterful strategic move by Parvati, right? Like, the fact that she's able to turn it around, and because honestly it doesn't make sense for Parvati to do that, right?
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't make sense for Parvati to just rip up this advantage she has that Luke ended up giving her,
yeah,
in the first place. But as she's sitting there and being like, hey, I had this, I read it, I didn't read the last sentence that said I couldn't use it when I was like talking about it. That point, super impressive. And then when she says, I did this to make sure I had a final four with Luke and Janine. Yeah, honestly, that is a way of using advantage we haven't really seen in Survivor before.
Yeah, like, does this count as a successful advantage play?
I think it's using an advantage correctly.
Like, yeah, she actually did use it against Cass, and mm-hmm. then she ripped it up to prove loyalty to Luke to get her the win.
Yeah, it's fascinating, right? Like, it's a lot of, and this is why I don't like the term, like, correct. Like, yeah, okay, you can have a correct idol play because there's a quantification to it, right?
Right.
Where you're nullifying votes and everything. You can use an advantage correctly to ensure a specific
outcome happens.
This is a new ingenious way of using an advantage, not in the way it's intended to be used.
Yeah.
And I think it's like, this is the type of experimentation that we don't see enough of in Survivor.
Mm-hmm.
It's very similar to the way that Jesse used the knowledge power to get Dwight's idol, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's the different thinking level, like, different level of thinking that we are seeing from Parvati, and why it's so impressive, how she's able to spin this in front of everyone.
Yeah, it's like, if Saria's steal a vote actually worked in Game Changers, and it wasn't, and it was transferable.
Yeah, exactly.
Kirby then asked Parv, was I even a consideration? Like, did you want me at all? In anything? And Parvati was like, hell yeah, I did, but nobody else did, and I couldn't be the outlier to save you, but I highly considered playing my idol for you in this situation, but that would have just put us on the outside, and we wouldn't have gotten anywhere in the game because now we're out of advantages. We're out.
Mm-hmm. No, and again, this is part of the appealing to the social game that she played, right? It's this idea of like, yeah, Kirby, like you could have been good. I was actually surprised she didn't bring up what she brought up in her voting confessional. Mm-hmm. The idea that when she voted Kirby out, she said, you just keep coming from your closest allies. And like, I don't want that to be me.
Right.
And obviously it's edited. Like she might've brought that up at some point, but I'm almost more impressed that she didn't bring it up mm-hmm. because I think that's not playing into Kirby. I think this plays into Kirby as a player a lot better.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, that's the end of Final Tribal Council. And before the votes, we have one vote for Luke, which is Sarah's vote. And we did have a comment earlier asking, can Sarah explain the vote for Luke? What did Luke do besides vote wrong most of the times? And I think it has to do with Luke's heart for the game. Mm-hmm. Luke has like an insane love for Survivor and Australian Survivor and just playing this and being the king of the jungle. And it really showed through in this Final Tribal Council. And if that's something that resonates with you, also, I mean, Luke and Sarah played together before.
Yeah. Sometimes you're putting a vote for second place. And it's something that we kind of forget sometimes when we get into a final three situation, but like sometimes you're voting for a second place.
Where it's like, I know that I'm probably voting for second, but like, I want Luke to be in second because of X, Y, and Z.
Mm-hmm. And like, yeah, there is the revote if in case of a tie for to figure out who is actually second, and Luke probably mm-hmm. wins that anyways. But this way it's definitive. And I think Sarah did want an Aussie to win. I think Sarah was someone who wanted an Aussie to win the game. I think mm-hmm. that plays into it a little bit. I think that when you're looking at the game, like you said, Sarah played with Luke all the way in 2017, mm-hmm. right? Like 8 years ago. That's a connection that's there. And I think Luke did deserve a vote, right? Like, you know, did he play as strong of a game as Parvati? No, not a chance, right? Mm-hmm. Like Parvati did in fact play like a flawless game. She played exactly the game she needed to get to the win here. She played it magnificently. Like she navigated being the largest target out there, right?
Yeah.
Like, and she didn't have to do it the way like Tony has to, where he sits back and he's like hiding, right? Tony has to be normal for a little while before he can kind of take over a game. Parvati was at the front this entire time. Parvati was a threat from the very moment she set foot on that beach. Parvati is literally it's Parvati 2.0.
She's never, after Micronesia, she's never stepped on the beach and not been, well, actually not even. Even mm-hmm. a little bit in Micronesia, they're like, she's a threat because she flirts with everybody.
Yeah.
But she's always had to play on this back foot. And that's mm-hmm. insane for a Survivor player to play as many times as she has and constantly been like, yeah, Parvati has to be the first boot.
Yeah. Right? Like she is someone who is too threatening to be in the game a lot of the time. She is someone who's so threatening, anyone who resembles Parvati has to be eliminated early in the game.
Yeah.
Right?
She has like changed a Survivor archetype. And like nobody can ever use the flirt game anymore because otherwise they're out.
And the way that she navigated this game from that position is impressive. Yes, she's given a good hand by having someone she's worked with incredibly closely with her right there. Someone she's the two people she is playing with from the American Survivor series, she's played the game with before. Like she knows these people. She gets a bit of advantage there over the rest of the world tribe and everything, but she was the target from the part, right? Mm-hmm. But again, Rob decided to go after Suri in that first vote instead of Parvati, right? Yeah. And that continued to happen.
After in the discussions, he went in after Parv, but
But and that continued to happen. And the fact that Parvati does get to the end of this game without a single vote cast against her, that all these votes went on Suri, of all people, who has also gotten to the end of games without a single vote against them.
Yeah.
Like, it's so impressive to see that. And Parvati deserved to win this season. Based on, like, everything we saw. Yes. Now, I can't possibly be on here as a specialist without Phil here and not, like, say something that's, like, a little negative. I really did not like the
So John has been muted because he cannot trash talk.
I'm not trash talking. I'm just saying I didn't like the confessionals from Parvati saying that she lost Heroes versus Villains because of a bitter jury. I didn't like that. That was, like, we saw so much maturity in Parvati's game.
But that's the way she feels. She feels that the jury was bitter and that she played a better game. Now, that was also because she was in the game as well. Mm-hmm. Also, if you have read her book, which I haven't finished it, but I've finished that part mm-hmm. of Heroes versus Villains, that, like, they basically wouldn't let her speak or answer anything, and she wasn't in a great mental space at that point either to, like, stand up for herself. So there's, I think, some personnel issues mm-hmm. within the jury. Do I think the jury votes correctly because it is that specific jury? Yes, but if you're also not letting someone speak, that kind of sucks.
Yeah, I mean, it sucks being at that point where you've already lost one game. Like, that's where Janine's at this season, right? But that is part of Survivor, too, right? That is part of the game of Survivor and playing the game. Yes. If you've gotten to the point where the jury's not even willing to let you speak, like, that is a reflection on your game. And because we saw so much growth, I cannot stress how much growth we saw from Parvati here. Like, she definitely seems like someone who is 20 years older than the first time she played Survivor. And been through a whole lot of life experience in that time. Mm-hmm. It's fantastic to see. It's an arc that we don't get to see ever. Like, reality TV, this is one of the great things about reality TV and where we're at in the cycle of reality TV right now, where we get to see these growth arcs from mm-hmm. people. And Barbara did such a good job. It's just the fact that it was highlighted, like, multiple times in the episode that bumped me.
I have to right my wrongs with Suri. Like, that was also, it's been highlighted multiple times in this episode, way too many times this season. Like, I get it, like, beginning, middle, and end. All right, we mention it, like, once in the beginning, once in the middle week, and then once now in the finale.
Yeah, but we had it multiple times in the same episode.
Yes, yes, yes.
So like, that's my one gripe. But overall, like, this was a well-deserved win. It's so impressive for someone like Parvati. And yeah, okay. There's, like, we have to get into it now, McKenna. We have to get into, like, the legacy talk of this all, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because there's a lot of talk about, like, Parvati being the greatest of all time in the voting confessionals and everything. Obviously, that's playing up the theme of this season and who's right. playing on it and everything. But is Parvati it feels bad asking you this question because I know you're biased already in this situation, but is this win as impressive as, say, as Sandra's second win, which was against Parvati?
Is it as impressive as
Tony's win against, like, all winners?
I don't think we can compare.
Yeah,
is the thing. I think because this is a different franchise, it's not the same game. They're not playing the same game. Australian Survivor is such a different beast than American Survivor is. If they were doing this with 16 days with Jeff Probst as the host, and it's still Australia versus the world,
mm-hmm.
and, like, CBS is running this, then I think we can count it as, like, then we can quantify it with Sandra's right. game, with Tony's game, because with Australian Survivor, it's just a different production of everything, so the game is just inherently different, and I think it's hard to compare it to other US Survivor games, in my opinion. I think it joins the two-time winner club of Survivor franchise.
Mm-hmm.
But because the other two won it in the same franchise, it's a little bit different.
So are you saying that Turbo, who's won Turkey's Survivor twice, is more a two-time winner than Parvati is?
I don't think it's a more. It's okay. She's won it on two different shows versus yes. Sandra, who's won it twice on one.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I don't disagree with that. But what I will say is this, I think there was a lot of talk about who that Mount Rushmore of Survivor is, like who the four are.
I think without this, Parvati was on it.
I know you do as a Parvati stan, but I think Parvati was that fourth person on it before, where it was like a question mark, right? Like Parvati was the one that I think like fell off of a lot of people's lists more. And it was like the 4 or 5 discussion. I think this now cements Parvati's legacy as a Mount Rushmore player of Survivor.
I'm pretty sure there was no question.
There was question.
I'm pretty sure there was no question on who was on this Mount Rushmore. But yeah, I love her, and I think it is an amazing win, well-deserved. It's just hard to compare it outside of AU. Yep. Inside of AU, Hyro's asking me, obviously Parvati is the best AU winner. No doubt about that. That is
not correct.
but I also haven't seen that many AU seasons to accurately.
You've also spoken with two AU winners previously too, so...
I have, and I'm standing by this. I'm sorry, Ferris, and I'm sorry, Miles, but my fandom runs deep for Parvati.
You expect this to be a 6-1 win for Parvati? Like, were you surprised to see how overwhelmingly she won this?
Yes and no. I think yes, because she is just that good. But no, because there are a lot of Australians on the jury. So granted, they still, like, Kirby had that relationship with Parvati, and Shawnee plays a Parvati-esque game.
Mm-hmm.
So there is that, you know, little bit there. I thought maybe Luke would get at least one more vote in maybe Shawnee, but...
Yeah. I think, yeah, I kind of agree.
Or even Tommy. Yeah. I thought maybe Tommy would go Luke.
I definitely thought this was going to be a closer vote. But that being said, I also think Parvati really did deserve it. Like she played her butt off this season, and it is really impressive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. I think it's time, John.
Well, I think there are a couple. I have one more question for you.
You have one more question?
I do. We've done this. We're finished Australia versus the world. What have we learned from it? Like, as Survivor fans, just as, like, what should Survivor take from this experiment we had this summer?
Cross-platform works.
Okay, yeah.
I think people showing up on U.S. Survivor and, like, you know, Jeff Kent trying to hide that he plays baseball.
Mm-hmm.
If we see someone pop in from Finland on U.S. soil, I don't hate it.
No, I don't either. I think it's fascinating. I think it's fun. I think it's honestly, it was so nice having Summer Survivor. It was so nice being hyped about Summer Survivor. Yes, this is an interesting one because it brought icons out, right? Like, this cast is absolutely stacked. They were so entertaining to watch. I think, if anything, this shows that Survivor, be it Australian Survivor, be it CBS, whatever, there is room to innovate still in this game while keeping it the same game. Like, yes, this is a truncated version of the game. It's so much smaller. It's so much more fast-paced. Yes, we complain about how fast-paced the 26-day game is, and replacing it with a 16-game, it feels way too fast-paced. But this is one of those instances where it's like, this is so nice and refreshing. We have Diego Soriano here saying, like, the season was so refreshing and made me like Survivor again after Survivor 48 turned me off. It was nice just having something different for once. And I think if CBS wanted to do these, like, short all-star seasons, this is a great way to get returning players back without having to dedicate a full season to them and give us a lot more entertainment and catching up with some of these players. Yes, it does. It makes things weird and challenging, but like we've seen what the challenge has done with like all-stars, right? You change the game a little bit, you make it work with your older cast members, and you still have an entertaining product that the consumers can get into, right? Put it on, like, I hate saying this, put it on Paramount Plus. Like, put it as like a Paramount Plus exclusive season, right? This is literally a season that airs only in Australia. We still found a way to do it, right? Like, do that, experiment more, have some more fun. Survivor has so much to offer us still. And this just proved that, like, we can have so much more fun with Survivor than the two seasons we get from the States every year.
But most importantly, John, Parvati was locked into Rushmore since 2010.
I disagree. I've always disagreed with that.
All right. Well, it is the moment where we have to talk about JLP.
I know.
I have not watched every Survivor AU season, but somehow I'm still connected to him as a host. He just brings such a different air that Jeff does not. And I don't know if the Golden God will bring the same kind of little bit that JLP does. I think he'll be more in the Jeff Probst of "you gotta dig deep" rather than JLP's like, "oh, big boy Lockie going down the slide, you know, it's a beefcake off." Like, it's just gonna be different. And like, that's what I love about Australian Survivor is JLP.
Yeah, Jonathan is what makes Australian Survivor different, in my opinion. And it's weird to say that, like, a host makes that much difference, but it does, right? And we have this conversation in American Survivor, like, what happens when Jeff Probst stops hosting? Like, is the show over? Do we replace him? How do we do that? It's nice that Australian Survivor is doing this so that we can change it, but it sucks because it's at the sacrifice of JLP. Like, Jonathan is such a phenomenal host. You get this sense from Jonathan at all times, he cares about this game so much.
Mm-hmm.
Like, even when Australian Survivor has the stupidest possible twists, he cares about this game so much. And just the way that the contestants speak about him, right? You can tell how much he cares about every single person who steps onto the beach in a mm-hmm. season that he's hosting. And we get that from Jeff every once in a while, but we kind of get the Jeff show sometimes. And yes, that's what I'm really worried about with David coming out. Like, David feels like the person who wants to be in the spotlight.
Yes.
And that concerns me because Survivor isn't about the host. Survivor is about the entire show. And the host is important. And maybe with David just being a host and not being a producer, I don't know if that's the case or not, but maybe that's like the difference between what David will be and what Jeff is. But I'm interested in it. I of course, I'm going to watch it because I still love Australian Survivor, but it's going to feel so much different without Jonathan there.
Yeah, and the worst part is that it wasn't on Jonathan's terms either. It wasn't JLP being like, mm-hmm. you know, I've had a fun time. This was a great, you know, last shebang, but I have some other things that I need to focus on right now. He literally posted an AI gif of him being punched off of a podium.
Yeah. I'm glad he got to go out doing this season. And mm-hmm. he got this, like, monumental thing. January's not going to be the same without JLP.
No. No, it is not. Well, I think we have covered every last inch of this finale. So Parvati, a queen in my heart and of Survivor. And we will see you some other times this week. So make sure you like, subscribe, turn on the notification bell, follow us on Instagram, follow us on X so you know when we go live, because we've got a lot of 49 coverage coming your way. We just don't know when that's happening. So please stay tuned for all of that. And we will see you at some point for 49. All right. Goodbye, everyone.